with a bang. It's the CBS Sports State of Combat podcast with the Brian Campbell, all box, all the time. Just how you like it, folks. Your boy BC back in the house, ready to make that money player. Yes, ready to give you the interview you have longed for from day one-ish of the In This Combat podcast. Who?
I it's Dwyer, the week of the
not that interview. Hey, you want to talk about Dwyer's future on this podcast? Well, that was a short conversation. Hopefully that guy can get his back foot together and email us back. We've got the Gypsy King, Tyson Fury, who returns to the ring this Saturday on ESPN Plus. And this man is off the damn rails. You're going to want to stop what you're doing because we're about to ruin audio podcasting as you know it. Shout out to my producer, Mikey Mormile, for beeping out, 79 inappropriate words over a 15-minute span. We got a nice chat, too, as well with WBO featherweight champion Heather the Heat Hardy, who this Friday in DAZN. One heck of a women's boxing match that I'm sure Rafe Boogs will care about when she goes in there against Amanda Serrano. Two names you definitely know at the old MSG Theater. And, so that's what we do in this show, okay? We bring it. We're a little buffoonish. But where else are you going to get that type of package? Where else would you have a soundboard so big you could never find the button that you're looking for? Oh, yeah, this show right here. All right. Hey, five-star review season upon us. Please, get ahead of yourself. Give back. It's the holiday season, all right? So whoop-de-doo, right? Dippity-da. Five-star review, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you I know you guys love us, but you must have forgot lately. We need a little bit more. When I beat Bernard Hopkins and won the IBF, the right was hurt, beat him with the left. Y'all must have forgot. I know you didn't forget about my co-host. Let's bring him in right now. We've got so much Gypsy to talk about. He's a New York Times best-selling author, a Filipino TV icon, and a protector of all things cruiserweights, Rafe Bartholomew. Let me lick you up.
Cruiserweight. Best division in box. If you respect box. Cruise with me. Hey.
Oh, baby. Rafe Boogs. I should have said the Athletic's own boxing features.
Thank you,
writer.
Man. At least somebody got the score right.
Exactly.
Staff writer at The Athletic Box.
Some Irish guy. Right, Rafe?
Which one? Canelo?
You.
Me. I am only one quarter Irish. I just happen to be raised around the Irish at McSorley's Old Ale House in New York City. But my dad, who works there, is not the Irish part. My mom was half Irish, but my dad is not. He's just some bum from Ohio who ended up living above a bar and spent his life there.
Wow. This will not be the last time we talk about or to Irish people today. So shout out to the Gypsy crew, the Alex Godinez crew, the Irish crew. Hey, Rafe, where do you think we're at in the history of our relationship with Richard Dwyer? Is it over?
How do you mean? Do you mean because he hasn't appeared on the show yet? Because he's ghosting your emails?
Well, Rafe, they say don't meet your idol. Some have said don't interview your idol. So we've always had this image of what actually getting Richie D on this show would feel like, look like, and sound like.
Hi, it's Dwyer, the week of the fight.
And based upon the fact that we interviewed one of our heroes, I interviewed one of our heroes this week, Tyson Fury, and spoiler alert, Rafe, it didn't necessarily go the direction I thought it would. So the people are going to get a chance to hear that shortly. But I don't know if I'm rocking Team Gypsy after this chat, this controversial chat you're about to hear, in which one of the two of us got hung up on at the end. Should this be a harbinger of potential doom? Should we finally connect the dots and get Attorney Dwyer on this program?
O'Brien. Yeah, look, this is a conversation that's happening all over society at this point. How do you separate the art from the artist? Can you separate the art from the artist? Now, just because you didn't have the the interview of your dreams with Tyson Fury. That doesn't, first of all, we don't know what he may have been the interview of his dreams. He may have loved it. It shouldn't affect how you perceive him as a fighter. Of course, it wouldn't affect your analysis because you're a completely objective robot and you never, ever, ever let emotions into things. And that's how you get scores right, like Austin Trout over Canelo. Well,
that's how men or, do it, yeah.
Or Andre Ward over Sergei Kovalev the first time. That's how Brian gets these great scores.
Hey, Thurman may have beaten Pacquiao. It might have happened, bro, all right?
Brian, I'm just saying, don't let it get you down. Don't act like you can't enjoy Tyson Fury, the character, the man, and most importantly, the fighter, because that's what brings us to him in the first place throughout the rest of his career, just because of one interview. You're gonna be in this game for a long time, champ. You're gonna have a lot more pies to eat, and you are gonna get another crack at the king, the G King. And you know what? The next time, maybe you're face to face. Maybe you get that bond. Maybe it comes together for you. And the same goes for Dwyer. Dwyer could ignore us for the rest of our lives, the rest of his life. He cherishes the air of mystique that he has as this man who just talks into a webcam
and delights the masses,
and he doesn't want to puncture that balloon.
He's kind of like boxing's Unabomber, yeah, or a unicorn in that regard. I should have channeled my inner Dwyer at some point during this interview with Fury when the train was dangling Rafe by a ball hair from the tracks. At some point, I probably could have jumped in and been like,
"Hey, man, don't be a blank. You know, hey, you're really gonna act this way. You're really gonna be buffoonish."
Tyson Fury was buffoonish, Rafe, and it's not, just to correct history, we have had him on the show before, but it was a legitimately 2-minute interview from the red carpet ahead of that first Wilder Fury press conference in New York last year. Never had that full, I wanted to say sit down, but I really wanted a lay down, Michelle Joy Phelps style, inside the bed sheets there that we often see on YouTube. I want it that way, Rafe, right? I mean, you know what I mean?
Which is probably, I want it that way.
Tell me why, bro.
It wasn't happening.
Yeah, tell me why, right? Maybe I built it up too much, Rafe. Maybe I felt that he would be ropes approved. I felt that we could hang. By the way, there was no we. You bailed on me, the show, Alex Godinez. You left me hanging with all 6'9" of the Fury. I don't know if I was able to handle it. I don't know if I was ready for it in the end.
I thought that you could handle the full package. I thought that you. I thought that was really what I thought deep down. That's what you wanted.
I was born ready.
Yeah, well, not ready for that moment, though. All right, we're going to get to that very shortly. Rafe, how you living, bro? Speak to me on 9 Mile. Speak to me on your new life, okay? This ain't Eagle Rock, L.A., all right, bro?
No, things are a little different out here, a little cooler. I'm enjoying it. Still learning my way around. Almost have a furnished apartment at this point in time. I'm doing all right. What can I say? It's an exciting time. I get to experience Michigan. Life here in the Mitten is good.
How's your water?
Come on, man. Thankfully, it is very good, but that's a serious issue, and I wish it were better in all parts of the state.
All right. I'm looking out for your health here. Have you visited the ruins of the old Kronk Gym or went down to the Masonic Hall maybe, laced anything up?
I have been to the Joe Louis Fist, and hey, that was pretty awesome. I haven't done the full sightseeing tour. You know where I really want to go? It's not a box thing, but it is a Motown thing. The Motown Museum, the house where it all started. I mean, Smokey Robinson, all my old Art LeBeau jams. You remember that? You know what that's about?
Oh, I mean, it's normal for two friends to sit in a car for 7 hours stuck in traffic in a snowstorm and listen to Art LeBeau together on a Sunday night on the way to Fresno. That's, you know, friends do that, Rafe.
we listened to "Endless Love in the Dark."
I think we literally did that. That is true. There,
the first day, I might have had a little too much to drink when I met her.
There was tug. There was also war. There's a little bit of kindness going on too.
We listened to all of that while driving through the great town of Tehachapi, hometown of Nico Macias, the Rooster.
And I just don't think Broner, at this stage of his career, has the reflexes to deal with the bang bang.
Wow, wrong button at the wrong time there, Dwyer. Thank you. That's about it. We're going to give the people what they want. We're going to give them Tyson Fury. We're not going to F around. First, though, we're going to pause for a word from our friends and sponsors. Dig it.
CBS Wednesday. We have so many cool, diverse people from different backgrounds, different beliefs, different upbringings, and it just keeps growing.
I'm a citizen of the United States.
I'm a hustler.
I'm a big Taylor Swift fan.
I'm the queen of the tribe. I'm a
survivor. I am playing whatever role I gotta play.
I'm gonna play this game full speed.
I ain't going down like no punk.
A new Survivor, Wednesday on CBS and streaming on Paramount Plus.
It's the UEFA Champions League on Paramount Plus. Europe's top club soccer tournament. Champions versus champions. The best teams facing off in the knockout rounds.
Magnificent!
And it all takes place
while you're filling out financial reports at work. In the middle of your day, in the middle of your week. So use that second screen. Call in sick. Do whatever you gotta do to tune in Tuesdays and Wednesdays. Nobody watches the UEFA Champions League like us. Stream every match live exclusively on Paramount Plus.
And we're back. Your boy BC, Rafe Bugs, coming back at you. State of the combat. It's box time, Rafe. We're coming off of the most... did you care? Good Lord. Probably the worst weekend in boxing recent history in terms of there ain't nothing going on. Rafe, which gave you, to be honest, since I know you're not going to tune into UFC 242 in Saudi Arabia to watch Khabib Nurmagomedov, because we understand your principles and ultimately how you get down in that regard. You are from the hood.
Everybody's different. I don't want to watch two grown men with panties on.
Yeah, exactly. Did you get a chance, though, to watch PBC Countdown, PBC Face-to-Face, and any of your friends in the media that have programs, maybe F'd around and listen to Eric Raskin and Al Bernstein on the Showtime Boxing Podcast? Anything?
I've listened to those. I've dabbled in some of those programs. Definitely listened to that podcast. It wasn't boring. Listened to it again. Still wasn't boring. Right. Can't say I saw every second of every moment of these Spence Porter shows, but I think I caught some highlights here and there. You know, I like that Errol Spence was on some NFL football stuff. I don't really watch football, but shoot, sell that fight. Get that money, player.
Yeah, dig that thing again.
Boom, dig it again, dig it again. Yes.
All right, I'm just stalling for no reason. Rafe, let's get into the meat of it. It's Big Tice. It's Tyson Fury. He is back this Saturday, ESPN Plus, Las Vegas, Nevada, unbeaten Otto Wallin. And I had him late last week on this podcast coming up right now. It's the Gypsy King talking Wallin, Wilder, Fury, Joshua, Ruiz, Usyk, all that and then some. Tall, pale, and handsome. It's Tyson Fury right now. Enjoy. Tyson Fury, the lineal heavyweight champion of the world, finally has come home to the CBS Sports State of Combat Boxing Podcast. Big man, it's been a long time coming. How you doing?
Fantastic. Absolutely fantastic.
Let me just tell you, our listeners are fired up to get to hear your voice. Equally as fired up to watch your return Saturday, September 14th, Las Vegas, ESPN Plus, Otto Wallin. So why don't we start right there? To some who don't know the Big O, this looks like a second comeback fight. They want to see you with the Wilders, the Ruizes, the Joshuas, the Usyks. Why a second fight after the Schwaz when we know you are looking ahead to February to Deontay Wilder?
Listen, I'm just a boxer. I'm not a promoter, I'm not a manager, I'm not a trainer. I do my job and that's it. I go in the ring, smash some people up, get paid, go home. No more, no less. If you want to know about the ins and outs of stuff, speak to Bob Arum or Top Rank. I'm sure someone there can help you.
So what type of fight should we expect September 14th against Otto Wallin?
One there where two heavyweights are going to punch each other right in the face. Hard.
I love that right there. You mentioned Bob Arum, and this is a new co-promotional deal with you. Fight number two. You're on ESPN in the States. Big business for you. Bob Arum's a wild dude. We love having that crazy old fox on this show. And every time he does, Big Tice, he's talking about getting high. Have you partied with the old man? Have you broed out with him?
Yes, we've f***ed many prostitutes together, me and Bob. We've smoked lots of weed, and we do a lot of good stuff together. The guy's 149 years old, but he acts every day of 21.
Was that part of the appeal? The aura of Bob Arum for you making that deal?
Do you know what it was? Bob's a legendary promoter. He's an awesome guy to be around, but he's never met anybody like the Gypsy King. El Rey de los Gitanos.
All right, let me ask you this, and this is all in seriousness. Your comeback was incredible. You were robbed against Deontay Wilder. I can say that as a fact, and I think what it almost robbed was one of the greatest...
Deontay Wilder.
You know, one of the greatest comeback stories in sports history, and I don't say that loosely. It was incredible coming back from your mental health challenges, substance abuse, all of that stuff. But we've talked so much about that journey to get to the Wilder fight. How has it been for you since last December, staying on the straight and narrow, your mental health, all of that? How has it been for you up to this point?
It's been good, you know. I've been grinding away daily. You know, a lot of great boxers say that it's easy when you've got nothing in your guts out and give everything in the gym, but it's hard when you've got money and got success. But I find that totally wrong. I find it a lot easier to get up in the morning when I know I don't have to go and look for to put food, train my guts out even harder. I am training like a Trojan warrior here in Las Vegas, and I aim to prove and smash every heavyweight they put in front of me. And I say, I can't do any more than what I can do. I'm the greatest heavyweight that's ever lived and ever likely to be born to our planet. And I'm going to prove that by smashing every motherfucker that gets in front of me. And that's it. And that's how we roll.
All right, as of right now, as we record this, just very close in on your September 14th return, who is the biggest dosser in the heavyweight division?
Deontay Bronze Bollocks Wilder.
Why?
Because he just is. He's a dosser, and he knows he is.
Well, that's...
I see all this stuff about he wants me to step aside. Step aside to what? You know, he's terrified of the Gypsy King. He couldn't beat the Gypsy King when I had 3 years out the ring on alcohol and drugs. How the f*** is he going to beat the Gypsy King now? I've been training for 2 years. Come on!
You know, Eddie Hearn actually would agree with you on part of that.
I mean, I don't often agree with Tyson Fury, but Deontay Wilder...
Listen, we're all fired up. We're ready to go. We're ready to knock out people, ready to smash, I'm ready to box, I'm ready to grind. That's all I know.
Is there any truth to what Wilder's saying? That if Andy Ruiz upsets Anthony Joshua in their December rematch, that he would pay you to step aside so that he could attempt to become the undisputed champion against Ruiz?
Depends how much they want to pay me. Because I hear stepping aside is quite hard work, so it's very costly work.
Why announce the Wilder rematch when you both had interim fights?
Gotta speak to Bob Arum about all that. I told you, I only know about smashing. I don't know about business. I never went to school. I never got law degrees. I've not got any business economic degrees. I've got nothing. The only thing I know how to do is f*** motherfuckers up.
Well, we're a big fan of your antics and one-liners on the show. We're a big fan of a... top bloke named John Fury, who we play a lot of great sound bites of.
I'm X-rated, and he ain't.
Tell me about life growing up with the big gypsy himself, Big John. What were some of the life lessons that he imparted on you that make you who you are today?
He used to beat the shit out of me when I was a child, and that's how I became the heavyweight champ of the world.
He took a man's eyeball out, I hear. Is that true?
Well, I don't know about that. Like I said, you're asking me stuff about business and about law and all this stuff. I don't know anything like that. I only know about fighting, man. Fighting. That's all I know. That's all I've been bred and born to do is fight.
All right, on that note.
Fight. That's all I know.
On that note of being born and bred to fight, in all seriousness, you came into this world as a premature child. I've got two twin sons who came in extremely premature the same way, and they have an incredible fighting spirit for life for today. How much do you still think about that? That winning that first battle upon entering the world, and how much that sort of helped you form this resolve that's in you now that allowed you to, let's say, get up from hell against Deontay Wilder in round 12.
I don't think about it because I was a newborn baby, so I don't remember what it was like. You know what I mean? You know where I'm coming from, bro. All I think about is fucking motherfuckers up. I go to sleep dreaming about it. I wake up in the morning dreaming about it. I practice it every day, three times a day.
All right. I was going to, you know, look in to see if we had any karaoke time here. Sure. We play this soundbite on the show every single episode, Tyson. Check it out for a second.
I'll try the Gypsy Boys. I'll try the Irish crew.
Hey-o!
Hey, here we go.
Rising, chicken punches like Mike Tyson. What the hell is that from? Do you even remember doing that?
Yeah, that's me spitting lyrics. That's me, a lyrical G.
We could lay awake
Listen,
on this show.
I like to have fun. I'm not a serious guy. Don't take nothing too serious. Don't even take life or business or boxing or anything serious, because it's all a game. We're not promised tomorrow. We only live for today. So if you don't have fun today, you're going to be sad for the rest of the day. And that's all I know. And that's my motto. Enjoy, love, share positive vibes, and give people entertainment. That's what I do.
All right. I'm infatuated with your background, the gypsies, the Irish travelers. How would a regular buffer like myself be initiated into it? Could you teach me some shelter? Am I welcome among your crew?
I don't have a crew. I'm a one-man army. A one-man army. I'm a lone wolf. I'm a lion. I hunt alone.
All right. So you're saying I wouldn't be welcome among the gypsies?
I think Yuri and his crew. There's only one man stand against thousands. One man.
All right. Let me ask you this then. Who can improve more in a second fight, you or Deontay Wilder, from what we saw last December?
I have no idea. I've no real interest. Who improves? Who does what? What does it really f***ing mean? As soon as you get smashed in the face, who really cares anyway? It's a fight. That's all we know. It's not about improving or game plans. It's about f***ing motherfuckers up.
Well, what percentage of your peak, if you against Klitschko was 100% of your powers, what percentage do you think you were at coming back so soon that night against Wilder?
I don't know, maybe 3%.
All right. What do you make about Wilder saying you rising from the canvas in round 12 was more act than act of God?
I don't really care what Wilder. I'm not really interested what he says. I've got nothing. Do you know what? I'm really interested in what Wilder says, what any of these boxing bums say. I really ain't interested. Sticks and stones. They can slate me, they can hate me, they can want to date me. But at the end of the day, they all want to beat me. El Rey de los Gitanos. Translated to English, the Gypsy King.
Gypsy King is rising again. December 7th, when we see that aforementioned rematch, Ruiz, Joshua, I know you've gone on record many times saying Joshua doesn't have the cojones, doesn't have the bollocks. Who wins that second fight?
No interest at all. Don't care. Won't even watch it. December 7th, I'll be busy. I won't even be watching that fight because I've got no interest in those motherfuckers. Not one bit.
Well, you've said fat people can fight. You've said all fat people can. Is this going to be another
walkthrough? Yeah, I'm a fat person and I can fight. Never judge a book by its cover.
All right. Well, when we talk about the biggest threat, I've read the interview you gave ESPN Steve Kim. You said, yeah, Wilder's the biggest threat in this division, but it might actually be Alexander Usyk, the former undisputed cruiserweight champion who's moving up. What do you think about Usyk? Because you're normally the most skilled guy in the ring.
I don't think much about him, to be honest. He never enters the brainwaves. Never.
I mean, here's a guy who wants to face the best.
I'd ever think about, to be honest.
But what would a fight look like between you two from this standpoint? You're way more skilled than the other big guys in this division. That's, along with your size, your true calling card. Would a smaller man like Usyk, who's among the most skilled in this game, give you an incredible fight?
I don't think so. I could probably beat Usyk with one arm tied behind my back. And I'd let you pick which one you want me to fight with, left or right. Either way, it'd be good night.
All right, all right. We all good, Tyson Fury? Where are you just coming
we're
from
all,
before this interview?
We're all good. We're all good.
You're always putting on a show.
Always putting on a show.
Can you stop, Otto Valim?
Is there any more questions? Any more questions?
Well, we're almost there, but I mean, you made quick work of the Schwartz.
Let's rock and roll, then. Let's rock and roll.
Big man, you going to stop Otto Valim? Can you put that team type of pressure on him? Can you come with that same aggression against him?
Yeah, we're going to try. We're going to do our goddamn best. And that's all we can do in life is do your best. And if it's any good, it's good. And if it's no good, then it's shit. And that's it. That's all we can do. In life, you only got two or bad. That's it. There is no in between. You either do your best or you don't. Either way, it's going to be entertaining. It's going to be fun on the night. I'm going to throw lots of punches, and I'm sure he is too. He wants to win. I want to win. Usually makes for a fight. Who knows what happens in heavyweight boxing? One punch away from disaster or one punch away from glory.
Can Luis Ortiz ruin the best laid plans by beating Wilder later this year? Is that something you're thinking about?
I don't know. I don't know, man. Why are you asking me all these questions? I don't know.
What should we be talking about instead, Tyson Fury? I got a couple of minutes with you. What should we be talking about here?
I don't know. I don't know what to talk about these days, to be fair. You know, the boxing scene, I'm quite sick of it, actually. Quite sick of talking about boxing.
All right.
Andy Ruiz, Anthony Joshua, Deontay Wilde, Alexander Usyk. Me. The list goes on and on. And there's going to be another 10 coming out that will work anytime soon. And
yeah, Joe David Joyce Price. He's going to need 11 plumbers.
Dave Allen and Derek Chisora, David Price, Agit Kabayel. There's so many. Big Baby Miller. What does it really matter? They're all motherfuckers anyway, and they're all going to get fucked up.
You have a chance, Tyson Fury, to exit this heavyweight era as the man. This could be the Tyson Fury era when 2-3 years from now is all over. If you make your way through all of these names we just mentioned, where would that put you in heavyweight context of history? Do you care about that?
It won't put me nowhere. Not interested in history. Not interested in belts. Not interested in legacies. I'm not interested in going down in history as a top bloke. Not interested. I live for today. And today is good enough for me. And that's how I live. I don't care what he placed me in boxing history. I don't care about anything, about title defenses, anything like that. I mean, absolutely jack shit. It's about on the night, punching people in the face, taking a few back, and enjoying the night. That is it. When it's over, it's over. Who really gives a flying where people put you in life? Oh, he was the greatest. No, he was the greatest. No, he was the greatest. It's just some motherfucker's opinion who don't really count anyway. When all the doors are closed, who really gives a flying hoot sniff about what goes on in history? Live for today. Forget about tomorrow. Enjoy the now. And on that note, I'm going to say adios, amigos. See you on September the 14th. God bless. All praise be to the Most High. Amen.
Tyson, I just don't get it. Do you enjoy being heard? He's gone. He hung up. The phone call actually ended. Just like that. Yeah. So, Rafe. There's nerds in this world, Star Wars fans who wear shirts that say, you know, Han shot first. Fury hung first there. He had enough, apparently.
Brian, I got to say, I think that you're taking this too hard. That was a pretty cool interview. It was weird. It was awkward at times. But you got some new stuff, or some stuff I'd never heard Fury say. You also got him to say that he likes to beat mother effers the F up about 75 times. But really, I mean, think of if someone else, if one of us had just come across the sound of Tyson Fury saying that me and Bob Arum bang P's all the time and smoke W's all day and do with all these all kinds of ridiculousness like that. You know how much we'd wear that sound out? You got that out of him. You did not take an L here.
There were some L taking, though. I lost control of this man. He was not in serious mode. Apparently, and by the way, shout out to the great 2019 State of Combat Content Provider of the Year, Evan Korn of Top Rank, for getting that interview, making it happen. Rafe, I was the first on a long day of interviews. And I don't know what happened to Big Tice there, Rafe. He was in no sell mode. Everything was F Deontay Wilder. He jacked in the end, Rafe.
Is a mic drop, so to speak, a jacking?
I don't know. The two of us were essentially in a hot tub, Rafe. You know, you can believe what you want, whether it happened or not, but it did exist.
We both know it did exist.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Well,
seriously.
You can say you don't know what I'm talking about, but I'm seriously I know, saying it. And you know it did exist.
So I was left sitting in the hot tub, though, Rafe. We didn't get a real take. We got Usyk is a bum. I'd beat him with one hand tied behind my back. We got I don't care who wins, Ruiz, Wilder. They're both effing bums. Do you have any fear off of that? And you've been critical in print about the Gypsy King, about the sincerities of certain parts of his narrative. Do you have any fear that the man was amped up on Diet Coke or removed the diet?
Oh, or he didn't even he sounded worn out more than amped up. I mean, he was aggressive, but it's the sort of repeating of some of those lines kind of gave me the impression that maybe he was just done after a long day of interviews and not ready to come with anything fresh or new.
If that was the first one.
To really give you, you know, answer your questions with stories or at the sort of length we would hope for.
Poppycock to that, okay?
To me, it's complete poppycock.
That was the first interview of the day from our guy, the Gypsy Giant, all right?
Look, I don't know. Maybe he'd been working hard in the gym, brother. Didn't it happen in the late afternoon? I guess it was only 2 p.m. on the West Coast.
Well, did you have any fear in listening to that sort of off-the-rails presentation that our guy is not in the right headspace, or was he just effing around with a clown on the other end of the line?
I didn't. Honestly, Brian, I did not become fearful for his performance in the ring, for his overall mental health, for his staying on or off the wagon, any of that kind of stuff. Because when you say I've been critical of Tyson Fury in print, basically what I've tried to express is that Tyson Fury is never what he shows you or what he says he is. He is some of everything and a little of nothing. Nothing is totally true. And he's basically, he is extremely purposefully and I think naturally mercurial as a boxer and as a person. It's the same thing. He's keeping everyone guessing at all times. And it can be kind of a pain in the ass when you're talking to him like that. But it's sort of who he is. And I think when I get critical of him, I'm almost critical of the people who buy the narrative. It's like, come on, you know that this guy is spinning at all times because that's who he is. There's nothing wrong with that. I mean, he's said some bad things over the years, hasn't done a whole lot to really of hurtful things to people in terms of actions, I don't think. I think he should be forgiven, assuming he can make amends in whatever the right ways are. But it's just like he's. You just got to be careful around the guy. You got to be careful what you're listening to. You don't take anything too seriously. And he's sort of telling you that, too, at the same time as he's going off on crazy rants and sounding depressed and then happy and uplifting. I mean, he is a roller coaster, and you are setting yourself up for disappointment or being fooled if you believe too much in any narrative of Tyson Fury. The gentleman, the scoundrel, whatever you think he is, he'll show you the opposite just to mess with you.
That's interesting. I needed my wingman. I needed my brother. You're talking me off the ledge right now. You're counseling me as a brother right now, saying, no, it's not you, BC. It's him. But I do want to talk, Fury. I want to talk about some of the things he said.
Let's talk boxing. Let's talk Tyson Fury.
Thank you, Rich. He's Greg Maddux, as we know. He's Rich is going far saying he's the new Ali. I did, though, Rafe, as much as I want to talk Fury right now, I do want to talk you and your role in this, because I could have used a bodyguard in this interview. Remember what Charles Oakley filled early in his career for Michael Jordan? He was a wingman, a protector, the same role he fills today in poker rooms, right? In back areas of clubs, right? I could have used, because basically, Big Tice, I was ready to entertain him. I was ready to pour some water on his balls. I was ready to, if I had to, for the sake of entertainment, puffing him up. And I kind of could have used you to jump in and say, whoa, slow your roll, Big Gypsy. We're going to good cop, bad cop this. My boy, he's just trying to water plants.
Come on, let the boy water your plants.
Okay? I mean, he just wants to be Phelps. He just wants to sleep in your bed.
Sweet mother of God, what is the holdup? Let the boy sleep in your damn bed. He said he washed the sheets.
And in the end, Rafe, when it got completely out of control, I just wanted to have fun with him. I just wanted to do karaoke. I could have used you.
Stop this cruel game and allow the boy to keep one shred of dignity. For God's sakes, I can't stand to see him in all this pain. You vicious bastard.
Where were you?
Brian, I'm sorry I missed it. I'm sorry I was not there to experience that with you. I don't know that it necessarily would have been any better, because I don't think good cop, bad cop works on Tyson Fury. I mean, you got to come with some next level head games if you want to keep up with that man in a war of words. I mean, he is an all-timer in the gift of gab category. And you to stay ahead of him in a conversation like that, it's very difficult. He's going to decide pretty early on which direction he wants to take it in. And I bet that it's pretty hard to push him off of that, because at the end of the day, he's still the star in any of these interactions. And if he decides that he's done for any reason, whether he's having fun with it and leaving in a dramatic exit, or if he's just like, F this, I'm done, he can do anything he wants, more or less without repercussion to a couple of jabronis like us, whether it's one jabroni or two.
All right. I guess that's fair, Rafe. All right. It's not about me. It's about these listeners. Okay. And these listeners, they got something. They wanted a little bit more, but they got something very interesting. How close, though, despite the comments he's saying, there are, you know, all these heavyweights are bums, blah, blah, blah. I know there's that narrative you brought up in last week's show of Wilder saying, hey, maybe Fury will step aside so I can face the winner of Ruiz, Joshua. And you heard Fury just now be like, hey, pay me. And Bob Arum has come out and sort of crapped on that idea. How close do you think Fury, as a student of the game right now, is watching these other fights, is watching these other opponents, and does sort of have the entire division in his head on lockdown?
I don't know if Tyson Fury is the type who watches a ton of tape, who downloads all the information he can on potential opponents before he's been in the ring with them, or if he figures it out on the fly. I could see it being either way. I do think that whatever his way of preparing for fights is, whatever his way of being in the right mental space to compete at a high level, I think at this moment he's doing that. He is. So he's not. I think Tyson Fury is on track to be whatever it is he's going to be. If he gets his fights, he's going to show up and be a decent version of himself. Hopefully better and better each time as this comeback increases. And look, that starts on Saturday, right? Even if Otto Wallin is not a very exciting fight to most of us, I will be impressed if he does him like he did the Schwarz, because Wallin comes in with a little bit better pedigree and reputation than the Schwarz did. So if he gets rid of Wallin in as impressive and fast or close to as fast a fashion, that's a statement. And that means something. It hopefully does lead to a Wilder fight early next year. I would like to have heard him engage a little more on the issue of Wilder and the step aside money and that whole story. If they can contractually lock Wilder in, if Wilder wants to get out and fight Andy Ruiz, if Ruiz beats AJ again, it's tough, right? You can't force a fighter into the ring. But I wish he would have given you a little more there, but you know, he didn't do it.
Yeah. You know what? F him, Ray. If you think I care what that guy said on this podcast, no, I don't. Don't fall in love with a podcast interviewee who no longer exists. And that's fine, Rafe. I'll watch this fight on Saturday. We'll break down who we think wins when it's time to care later on. You got any other takeaways from this Fury thing?
I was a little struck by the dark ending there. You know, that nothing really matters. He sounded like me on my worst days, which on some level makes me think, well, if I think BS like that and never really do anything bad or change anything, then he probably is just doing the same thing. But you don't hear that out loud a lot. That was interesting to me.
That was, I'm glad you brought that up. That was sort of this moment at the end where you got to go, okay, most of what he said right now is BS. So I'll be Usyk around, one arm around behind my back. An hour earlier, talking to Steve Kim, he broke down Usyk as his toughest challenge. 2 hours later, talking to somebody else, I'm sure he gave very educated responses to his challenges. So you do have to go, okay, what was it? But I wonder if there was any truth in that. I wonder if, because in one sense, Rafe, I don't know if you heard him on the Mike Tyson hotboxing podcast, interview in the hot box, whatever you call that weed show they do. He was on last night. There was an interesting chat, but you know, he talked at length about how much just being involved in this game again is the cure to not go down the dark depression stages anymore, to not get back into substance abuse and all that. And then on this show, to sort of hear him go, you know what, I'm kind of sick of this boxing crap. You know, who cares about these names that are lining up? There's going to be 10 more of them tomorrow. Who cares? I wonder if the game is already wearing him out again. And that's sort of what you say, is he'll say, you know, he's an Aram, like, you know, I was lying today and tomorrow.
Well, you know, I think that is one of the interesting things, perhaps, about the position Tyson Fury has found himself in. He's played the game perfectly. He made his comeback. He bet huge on himself in the third fight back against the most dangerous puncher in the heavyweight division. Probably not even a stretch to say in all of boxing. And fought a wonderful fight, deserved to win in the wide majority of people's eyes. And the payoff for that was this big top rank deal, multiple fights. But what comes with that is he's no longer on that bleeding edge, right? Now he has to play the slow game of boxing.
He can't be the crazy gypsy. He's corporate now.
There's a little bit of that, although he's still doing his enough crazy to keep that part of him alive. I think to me, it's more like now he's the guy who's fighting the Schwarz and fighting Valin, and they're really, even a talker as flashy and gifted and quick witted as Tyson Fury can only come up with so many ways to talk his way out of the hole that is, I'm fighting trash twice in a row in quick succession. And that probably weighs on him. And plus, what got him back out of the depths? Do you think it was the idea of fighting Tom Schwarz and Otto Valin? No, it was the idea of coming back and reclaiming his throne against the no panache crew of AJ, Wilder, the top heavyweights who are good fighters, even no matter what Tyson Fury says about them. I think he needs competition. He is that part of him is real. And without it, I think that sort of leads to some of these mood swings because he can't get the adrenaline a fighter and an athlete of his caliber needs against these lesser opponents.
That's certainly fair. I would have liked a little bit more ownership to what's going on business and matchmaking wise than the, I don't know.
That's a lie.
Yeah. That like that's a bunch of BS. Lie. Straight up. Tell me, be honest. Say, look, I wanted to stay busy. The other heavyweights are busy with their own big fights right now. I know Valine's not a world beater or whatever, but you know what? Trying to help ESPN build a fan base here, trying to build up the brand for these bigger fights. Does it matter? No. Do we win anything more if he shows how the sausage is being made? No. But anything's better than the, I don't know, I ain't got a degree, call effing Bob Arum. But yeah, I mean, look at the entire man. We know what this fight is.
I think this fight is a mismatch.
And he sort of said that in the way in different interviews in the last few weeks in which he can't even pronounce Valine's name. He's not even trying to. It's changing every interview. He told, we played the sound of him on that weird Golic show where he's like, yeah, I would have preferred to fight anybody really other than this guy. So it's a wild ride. And this will go down in history as one of the more wild moments in this podcast, Rafe, all right?
It was a historical interview, Brian. Keep your head up.
Yeah, forgive, but don't forget, all right? I don't know if I'm shouting out the Gypsy Crew anymore. I asked him. I wanted to be part of his clan, Rafe. I was ready to be initiated.
That was a mistake, Brian. This is not a gang. This is something you were born into. This is like asking Jesse Jackson, how can I be black? That is a mistake. All right. It is not that. That was probably the one.
That was a turning point.
Misstep that in listening to your performance on the podcast.
Okay. Okay. I needed this. I needed you to tell me where I went wrong, Rafe, where I took the L in the end. Okay.
I did when I was listening to that. I did wish I were there in sort of a Jim Gray capacity to jump in and be like, no.
All right. No. This is Gypsy John's moment. All right. Yeah. Wow. I still would like a dream interview with John Fury, but I doubt we'll get anything out of that. I mean, we know how John likes to live his life in the end.
Hear this. I don't have Twitter. I don't have Facebook. I don't have Instagram. I don't have nothing. I've got a £10 mobile phone. That's what I've got. And that's all I want. All I want to do is say hello and goodbye. I'm not interested in the modern world. So don't buy into these fake accounts. I've got nothing like that and don't want it. Never will have it either.
All right. Well, we had a good run with the Furies, Rafe. All right. I guess Yui Fury.
The 10 pound mobile phone. Is that like the Zach Morris brick?
Yes,
you think he's got that?
Yes, yes. You gotta learn to hold your own, Rafe. They do get jealous when they see you with your mobile phone. All right, I want to talk about
I want guys.
Did you see some latest news this week, Rafe? Derek Chisora's press conference in which he straight up called out everyone from Eddie Hearn to Regis Progre and was like, "F you, pay me, put me in the main event or pay me." And then eventually he walked out. Your thoughts?
What a great performance. Look, one thing you can guarantee even more. I mean, Derek Chisora comes to fight. He's usually a fun guy to watch in the ring, except when he's not in great shape. But at a press conference, that man brings it. I mean, think about his best moments, throwing the table, getting glassed. he has, the press conference before the Dillian White rematch where they were talking about the anal beads and all the voodoo and stuff.
Oh, you mean this press conference?
No, the press conference had, sex toys, anal beads, religion, voodoo dolls, donkey talk. I had a bit of everything.
That's the one, Brian. That's the thing I was noticing. He had that moment where he's like, "I'm getting effed with no Vaseline." Shout out to Ice Cube, and that it's like every something about Derek Chisora. Every time he's at one of these press conferences, he has to have some backdoor action, right? I mean, it's like anal. He got the anal beads. He's got the Vaseline comment. I don't know. I'm just observing a pattern. But speaking to the substance of it, I thought it was interesting because one, correct me if I'm wrong, but I see no lies. Derek Chisora and Joseph Parker are not as good pound for pound as Regis Progre and Josh Taylor, but they are way bigger draws in the UK and anywhere, honestly, in boxing. Even in the United States, they would be bigger draws.
And to pause you real quick, did you see their face-off at that same press conference when they were just talking-ish? That got me so damn fired up because Josh Taylor stood up tall in the trash talk game. I thought he'd be a little more respectful, and he went at it.
They did the same right after the Taylor-Baranchik fight when they were in the ring together. They went right into it. Just look, Taylor, it's going to be a good fight. Everyone, all the hardcores, shout out to all of us because we know that is going to be an awesome fight on the level at which it's going to be fought and how much these guys are going to go after each other. Who is not psyched for that? But Chisora, yeah, it won. But unfortunately, that great fight is not as big a draw as Derek Chisora and Joseph Parker. And Derek Chisora, I don't blame him for feeling a way about being brought in to pump up the numbers of these other guys and possibly paid less than them. If that's true, he has a right to feel that way. Now, in sports, as they always say, you're worth whatever you negotiate for. So if you didn't get as much as the other guy, that sucks.
Then
but
you're
what can
a pumper.
You do?
Yeah, you're a pumper in the end.
He pumps it more than once.
Rafe, I want to get your thoughts on this big news. KSI Logan Paul 2.
Who the hell is that?
I knew he was going to say that. No, those are YouTubers.
Oh, I don't know who those guys are. I'm not on YouTube.
They're going to have a professional fight on DAZN in L.A. with Billy Joe Saunders in the co-main. And, of course, their first fight, which was Headgear Amateur. What, it did a million pay-per-view buys around the world at $10 a pop or whatever it was when they fought in London. The great Eddie Hearns knows where to cash in. A pretty smart move for DAZN here, right, Rafe, to connect with a new audience, connect with all those nerd gamers?
It's not even just nerd gamers. I have no clue who the hell these 20 million people subscribe
to. It's millennials, right?
I'm a millennial, man.
No, what's that gap between Gen X and millennial? That's what I am, all right? Is it called washed? Because that's what I am. What is that gap
called? I'm millennial bordering on washed. I'm an old millennial. I think it's an even younger. I think this is Gen Z. We're really getting into the weeds here, Brian. It is a very smart move for DAZN because DAZN is not necessarily in the business of boxing, right? Yes, boxing is part of their business, but DAZN's goal is to add subscribers. This will do that. Great. Good for them. Get that money, player. I'm not mad at any of them for that. Please, 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 please just don't sell me this is going to grow boxing. This is going to be great for boxing. We're going to make so many new fans because we're putting Billy Joe Saunders on the undercard. Good Lord. I think Billy Joe Saunders is really good when he's on his game and can be a fun fighter for the educated fan to watch. Not who I'm going to introduce a bunch of video game playing morons who are 10 years old to the sport with. All right. I'm going to give them some action. What's a shame? If they were even remotely serious about luring fans into boxing with this, they would put my man, King Rye, Ryan Garcia, on that undercard.
Yes.
I know he is not a Matchroom fighter. He is a Golden Boy fighter. But it's still DAZN.
Yes.
They should be able to work something out. And he is the only person who has one foot in both of those worlds.
Yeah, 3 million Instagram followers can't be wrong. And
he is a legit
and they're ready for impregnation.
YouTuber influencer type bloke. And he is a boxer. He is a real talented prospect. He should be on that card. That is your bridge between these two worlds. It ain't Billy Joe. I hate to say it. It ain't Devin Haney as great as I think he will be in his career. It's someone like Ryan Garcia. All of these things that are supposed to be good for boxing and save boxing, nothing changes. Boxing doesn't get much worse. It doesn't get much better. It's fine. Everyone shut up. Do your cash grab. Don't try to con me.
Wow. All right.
Zone and Eddie Hearn, and these guys have a plan to build a platform.
This will help that plan. I will give respect. And look, it's a circus. It's a joke. It could only happen in boxing and MMA for something like this to happen, where basically celebrities, we've seen CM Punk in MMA, where celebrities sort of just get these opportunities. I don't want to see it regularly. I don't hate it, because here's why. These two, I mean, they've got a ridiculous following combined, but they actually take it seriously, Rafe. It's not like Barstool Sports rough and rowdy.
Why? Why do you say they take it seriously? Because they take a lot of PEDs and get in good shape?
Okay, that's probably true. But I watched their first fight, and they respected the craft. It wasn't like Screech celebrity boxing just throwing haymakers. Like they, so I have a small, already in a hood sport, in a red light district carnival sport, and an ultimate carnival event, I actually have respect for the respect that they're showing to this. But yeah, it's all crap.
You have respect for the respect that they show.
I don't know what I'm talking about.
People who commit suicide in forests in Japan.
That's a fair point. They're all clowns. So is Billy Joe Saunders.
And staff the pies. Because you can't get naked in front of a woman looking like that.
Not yet, but I will. I will soon. You know, I was called a fat Lance Bass.
Oh no! When, like,
on a
recently?
YouTube comment for that for the Monday Morning Combat show I do on Showtime's Below the Belt with Luke Thomas.
That's now that is not the same as the DAZN show Total Combat.
No, what is that? That's weird, eh?
No, that's so weird. Not like Morning Combat, which is super, super normal.
No, that's
great.
That's normal. Yeah, spelled with a K, Rafe. All right.
Do you think I do? You know what? I can get behind the Billy Joe Saunders idea a little bit, just because if he brings the Irish crew, if he brings the Travelers in there,
yes,
and they mix with the YouTubers crowd,
it's gonna be a brawl.
That's a nice meeting of worlds, and maybe a few people will go home with a little bit of Traveler.
Well, last time. In Carnival Celebrity Boxing, that we mixed worlds, we got the skinheads together with our clan for Mayweather McGregor, and we had sound bites like this.
Man, your ass is too frail. You're going to find it out, too.
I'm just telling
Trust
you,
and believe me, you're going to find it out.
Yeah, he found that out. Rafe, real quick to end this ridiculous talk, did you see a little war of words there between Leonard Ellerby and Dan Rafael, in which Dan Rafael was defending the KSI Logan Paul bout on Twitter? Then you had Ellerby going, oh, look at this guy. You ripped Mayweather McGregor up and down like crazy. And by the way, at the Brooklyn stop of that Maymac press tour, I sat next to Dan when Leonard undressed him on the microphone. And Dan came back with the argument that a 49-0 all-time great fighter fighting a guy in his first pro fight is more ridiculous than this, because KSI and Logan Paul are at least evenly matched. I don't buy that logic. Like it's all ridiculousness. First of all, like, I mean, at least Conor McGregor was like a competent elite combat sports athlete.
Yes, absolutely. I think I disagree with the argument that this should even be in the same universe being compared to Floyd versus McGregor, because they were both professional athletes. They were both professional combat sports athletes. They are both professional combat sports athletes in similar, not the same sports. Obviously, there's a huge difference between boxing and MMA, but striking backgrounds, it was something that was a circus fight, but it was not, it was an actual fight. And they were people who make their careers as fighters. It just you can criticize that fight, but it's not something to use in an argument to prop up Logan Paul versus KSI.
Yeah,
and Brian, like the Logan Paul, the thing that I have found interesting in the response to Logan Paul KSI discussion has been, it does seem like our world, our boxing media world, has been way more open-minded and willing to embrace this fight than we are anytime there is another Floyd Mayweather coming back rumor. Like every time there's a rumored Floyd comeback, there's a ton of tweets and everyone being like, oh my God, is this happening again? I'm going to shoot myself. I hate boxing, whatever. But we want to watch
boxing
these two clowns?
Is full of shit, man.
I think that I don't need Floyd to come back. I'm not hoping that Floyd comes back, although I wouldn't mind the Manny fight. I'm not going to pretend that I would.
You just don't want him against a Japanese kickboxer who's four weight classes.
I don't know about Floyd's reported Chinese exhibition fight.
No more
fight
Logan
in 2020.
Paul talk, no more KSI talk. But yeah, some people got that score wrong.
You have a big dump in your pants.
Yeah, it smells. All right, Rafe, that's all I got for news this week. I'm ready to roll into weekend preview. Do you care? You got anything else you want to sell or peddle before then?
No, I want to begin caring.
All right, let's start caring about what's going on Friday night in DAZN, New York's Madison Square Garden Theater. The main event is Devin Haney. We'll get to that in a second. But how about we chat with Heather Hardy? She's the WBO Women's Featherweight Champion. Big-time showdown here in the women's game against seven-time world champion Amanda Serrano. Friday night in DAZN, let's talk to the Heat. Get yourself in heat right now, Rafe. Enjoy. Heather, the Heat Hardy, how you doing?
Doing well, thank you. Yourself?
So good. So good to hear your voice. Very excited for you and fired up for this women's title fight that all fans need to see. We talk about a fight that has personalities, that has big-time records, this WBO featherweight title bout. Friday, September 13th, Madison Square Garden, the Hulu Theater. Heather, this you and Amanda Serrano have been circling each other for years. What's sort of the history of the relationship / friendship, and how are you going to put that aside for this one?
Sure. I mean, Amanda and I met back in like 2012, right when I first was turning pro, and Jordan had asked me if I wanted to come in for some sparring, and you know, we had a handful of sparring sessions early in my career, and Jordan really respected me. I think he was so impressed that I was so tough and could stay in there with Amanda. You know, she's such a hard hitter. They couldn't really get girls to come in for consistent sparring, and, you know, we just became friendly, and Jordan was adamant that we wouldn't use each other to make our way to the top, no trash talking, stuff like that, but we respected each other, let ourselves kind of climbed to the top. Now here we are.
And, you know, I've seen the interviews with Amanda where she has full respect for you. And she, when talking about those sparring sessions, said Heather just wouldn't stop coming back every day, the next day, no matter how hard it was. I mean, what do you think you showed her in those sessions? And I know in sparring, you never know what you can take from it. A lot of times it's years apart from when you end up fighting somebody. But what do you think she learned about you in those?
Well, that I'm tough and that I'm in pretty good shape and that I'm not someone that you can break. You can't break me. And so if anything she learned and took from those sparring sessions is that she can't break me.
Absolutely.
I suppose there's a lot she took from the sparring sessions, right? But I would say to my credit, that's one thing that nobody can sleep on.
When you have that reputation for being such a tough fighter and a tough out, and I say tough out, you've never lost in the boxing ring. You're 22-0, but that's sort of your calling card, the toughness mixed with the skill. For you personally, what's the foundation of that? Where does that come from?
There are so many times in life where if you don't keep fighting, then you don't really get to see the next day. You know, like I've been through so much in my real life. But I know what it's like to fight from the bottom coming up. And to be inside a fist fight, I mean, that's easy compared to some of the other things. Like, you go into a fist fight, you always got a chance to win. No matter what your odds are or what people think about the other person, I always have a chance to win when I step into the ring or the cage. There are some times you're fighting where you ain't got a chance, you know, and you still got to give it everything you got. So I know what it means to dig deep.
Yeah, I can certainly respect that. You've got the unbeaten record, you've got the title, but you're certainly going against one of the most decorated belt collectors and boxers we've seen, a seven-division world champion in Amanda Serrano. How do you sort of break down from a tactical standpoint and what both of you bring into the ring at what type of style of fight we're going to see?
Well, Amanda's a solid puncher. She's a strong puncher. And as tough as I am, I'm smart, too. I don't think people give me enough credit that I'm a smart fighter. So do I want to stand in front of her? No. But if I have to, am I going to? You bet your ass I am. So You're going to see an exciting fight, for sure. I mean, neither one of us like to play games in there. We're in there to take, you know, she wants to take my belt, and I want to bring it back home.
You're a New York-based fighter. You always draw a big crowd. I mean, this is the theater at New York's Madison Square Garden. This is the Mecca. This is the place you won your world title in 2018. Is that real, that aura of MSG that so many people talk about, where when you step into that building and step into that ring, that it is just something special going on in the air?
For sure. It's magic. That's where Billy Joel plays his piano, you know? Some of the biggest sports, you know, the history of sports in Madison Square Garden is so rich to be able to be a part of it, to be able to be in the locker room. I had my last MMA fight at MSG, and when I went into my locker room, they had a little card for me that said, "Oh, welcome back to the garden, Heather," and like a little bag, like a gift. And I just cried before the fight. I was like, "Who the hell am I?" So it never gets old.
That's awesome. And you did have that run in Bellator that was exciting. You became an instant fan favorite. You fought on some very big cards, like you mentioned, ended up going 2-2. Is that it for you on that side, or are you still open to opportunities in that sport?
I don't know, man. I mean, I don't like to count anything out. I love to fight. I fight for my career. I fight, like, you know, to put food on the table. So when an opportunity comes up, I weigh it out. Like, I'll be honest, I really didn't plan on coming back to boxing until Amanda called me out. And then I had to weigh out my options and think about, was it worth it? And here I am. So, I'm open to hear.
What's your biggest takeaway from your 2-year, 4-fight run in mixed martial arts compared with the long resume you built in boxing? Was it an enjoyable experience overall?
It was really hard. I mean, you know, I had my first MMA fight. My very first fight, let alone a pro debut, but my very first MMA fight at 35 years old, you know, who the hell does that? I didn't even know what I was doing when I got in that cage. It was a good career decision. I'm really glad I did it. I mean, my nose isn't so, didn't come out complete like the rest of me did. My nose probably wishes I didn't make that switch over, but it served its purpose for sure.
How much different is it in terms of, you know, when you're game planning, when you're in there and it's not just your two hands? I mean, you could end up on your back for a full round. A lot of bad things can happen in there. And I know you came into some of these skills late, learning jiu-jitsu, learning wrestling, learning all that stuff. What's it like in that chess match with all those extra additives in there?
Man, it's nerve-wracking, you know, but like when I first started with MMA, my mom told me, you know, like my mom's kind of like, listen, if somebody steals your wallet on the street, are you going to ask them what belt they are in jiu-jitsu? Or no, you're going to get your wallet back. So I never really went into the cage being so worried about what the other person was going to do as much as what do I have to do to win. And I'd say 50-50 ain't so bad for a 35-year-old mama who never did it before.
Not bad at
all. One of the biggest MMA organizations in the world, no less.
Well, you developed a reputation pretty quick in Bellator. We're like, if Heather Hardy's fighting, we got to find out. Is it on DAZN? Is it on Paramount? Where is this? This is going to be a fun fight. I mean, do you take pride in that?
I sure do. I mean, like every fighter would. You know, you want people to want to see you fight, right? And people always wanted to see me for a good reason. And that I'm proud of.
All right. Well, you enter this fight as the betting underdog. Do you have the mentality of an underdog in this fight against Serrano?
Yeah, I sure do. I mean, look, the promoters are even already talking about her next fight against Katie, you know, and they're promoting this big super fight between her and Katie. I knew going in, I'm not just going up against a 7-division world champion. I have to break what they've already plotted out for her, right? They already planned for me to lose. People are writing articles talking about how I'm going to be her hardest win ever. So I've already been counted out. But, you know, like I said in the beginning of this interview, from my life, I've been fighting at the underdog for a really long time. A really long time. And I know what it's like to fight from the bottom when nobody's cheering for you. So I'm cool with it.
You know, and you also came into this sport turning pro in 2012, where you know, the how people looked at it at women's boxing is certainly not at the level it is today, where you're one of the big names people talk about in terms of there's marketable fighters that fans need to see, that a lot of fans that didn't know much about women's boxing are learning quickly. They're learning the Katie Taylors, they're learning the Amanda Serranos, and you know, all on and on, and certainly Clarissa Shields winning 2 gold medals helped that. How different is it from when you started from where it is today, and how happy are you with the growth of the sport?
It's tremendously different. 2012 was the first year that women were allowed to box in the Olympics. So we're seeing all these names that you just mentioned, like Clarissa Shields and Katie Taylor. These are girls who competed in the Olympics, who caught the eyes of the promoters, and that's why they signed them on. I mean, to say that women's boxing is thriving, I think that's really not accurate, because each promoter maybe has one girl, two girls who came out of the Olympics and they're promoting them. You know, you look at a guy like Lou DiBella, he has a stable of female champions that he's been trying to promote. And no one else is really doing that. I mean, we're way better off than we were in 2012. And everybody always criticizes me as I'm one of those women who's never satisfied. She's always complaining. She's always talking about this. But true story, man, no freedom till we're equal. And we're nowhere close to that yet.
How does the sport get there? And you know, it may come long after you're – hopefully not, but it may come long after you're gone. What would be some of the big changes that would need to be made for pay equality, for more TV time, for just more overall exposure for women's boxing?
Well, a big step now is that they've expanded the weight classes in the 2020 Olympics for women's boxing, which is really exciting because it's going to produce more champions, more faces, get a little bit more attention to the girls who've been grinded through the amateurs. You know, like a lot of the argument from the networks was always like that there aren't enough competition, there aren't enough girls. But you have amateurs right now in their late teens, early 20s with hundreds of experience, hundreds of amateur fights that could go in and put really technical boxing matches out. So that's really exciting. Like you said, I'm 37. It will probably come way after my time, but things are headed in the right direction.
And you know, you certainly played a big role by going out there and making fun fights and being a good ambassador for the sport. And I know this isn't you know, your retirement, so it's almost weird to ask questions on legacy, but how much do you think about the idea of what you put out there for people, either from being a role model or just how people may remember you when you do eventually hang it up?
I'll be honest. Like I said, I already told you I planned on retiring, and they kind of dragged me back into boxing with this fight with Amanda. But I really got to a point where I felt like I did everything I wanted to do. I mean, I turned pro in 2012, became the first female ever to do so many different things, right? I mean, who would have thought in 2012 when I made my pro debut, if I said to everybody up on in that ring, you know, in 5 years, I'm going to win my first world title on HBO, everybody would have laughed at me. But I did it, right? At Madison Square Garden on HBO, I did it. So I feel really confident that I can walk away with this from this sport feeling like I did the best I can. I did a ton of stuff that people said I'd never do. I feel accomplished.
Yeah, indeed, indeed. Final question here on this fight, which should be spectacular, should be a real fun one. What has to go right for you for this to be a big win for Heather Hardy against Amanda Serrano?
I have to go right. I can't make no mistakes. That's what Amanda does. She kept and what every good fighter does, right? They capitalize on your mistakes. So I can't make no mistakes. I got to be the perfect Heather Hardy on Friday night.
Can't wait to see this Friday, September 13th, live on DAZN. Devin Haney in the main event, but don't miss this fight. Heather Hardy, Amanda Serrano, New York City. Heather, thank you so much for the time. Great chatting with you. Really looking forward to see how this plays out.
Thanks for having me, buddy. I'll talk soon.
Thanks. All right, Rafe. You know, we've heard you in the past be critical of women's boxing in terms of should we care, what type of placement it should get. At the very least, this is a fight. Two good fighters, two big names, two people with New York City backgrounds who are fighting in MSG, who are going to probably help pack that theater. I'm interested in this fight. Hardy at 37, past her prime, you heard her talk about it, but she comes to fight. Serrano, much more skilled, bigger puncher. If this is the bridge to get Katie Taylor, an important opponent, then that little game, that little bracket they got going on in DAZN, I'm here for it. I know you don't want to talk about Delphine Persoon, but I'm here for it, Rafe.
Brian, first of all, I don't know why you're projecting all these negative vibes on me. I've never uttered anything close to the attitudes that you're suggesting I hold. And of course, in fact, I don't hold anything of the sort. Just because sometimes I keep my comments short on some of these fights you throw by me on the weekly basis, that doesn't mean I got anything against them. I love me some Heather Heat Hardy. I love me some Amanda Serrano. And actually, to be serious for a minute, I think this is an interesting, fun matchup. Though both women have been selling tickets to fights that on cards they've been on big time for years in the New York area. So damn right, they deserve this spot on the card. And I think that especially in a venue like the theater, whatever they call it now at Madison Square Garden, the old Felt Forum, that's what my dad calls it, the Felt Forum, in there, their crowds are going to be out, and it's going to be exciting. It's going to be fun. And Heather Hardy makes really fun fights. I think Amanda Serrano is better, but yeah, if it leads to a really good fight between her and Katie Taylor, assuming she gets through another fight with Delphine Persoon or whatever the hell happens after that, good, man. They're making interesting fights, including the fights with Clarissa Shields on the other side. And there's momentum building for women's boxing that hadn't been there before, and that's helping bring people who, as you have suggested, I have dragged my feet for this movement.
I mean,
it's bringing,
some people were questioning,
bringing us along.
All right, that's a very woke take from you. We don't. I mean, you're okay with suffrage?
That woman judge.
You're not going down that road. I respect that. What do you think about Hardy's comments there, where she said, where I sort of put over that women's boxing sort of getting some shine right now? It's coming together. And she was like, well, hold up. We got a long way to go here. We're in women's pay. We're not even remotely even. That's why I had to go to Bellator for four fights. I liked her responses in terms of what might help and change it in the future. But do you think this is where we're going to stay for a while? Meaning, okay, we got three or four names we know. We're going to care a little bit when you match them together. But it's not going to be UFC. Until we get a Rousey, we're not going to get the UFC level of care for this.
Yeah, especially with boxing, where the pay scales don't make any kind of sense. This is not like a regularized business or in any way. This is, you get what a random number someone has made up or negotiated, or you've negotiated for, and that's it. And I think that Heather Hardy especially has a very strong case with her history of selling huge blocks of tickets to people in the New York area to come watch her fights, that she's gotten a raw deal. But in the greater scheme, it's always going to be the fighters selling huge at the very top of the sport, the heavyweights, the Floyds, the Mannies, the gigantic megastars are going to make the lion's share of the money. And unless boxing produces a female megastar along those lines, I don't think they're ever going to get that kind of money.
I'm with you. You do need that one star, that one thing to really make the change happen. But let's talk quickly about this DAZN main event this Friday. Devin Haney, rising star, moving up to the title level. He's coming off that insane knockout. Do you remember the bloke that he sent to the deep, dark depths? It was fun to watch, Rafe.
I remember the knockout. I remember the bloke.
This is a vacant interim WBC lightweight title bout. Haney versus Zaur
Abdulayev.
Abdulayev. Sorry, Rafe. I don't do well on this show with names. We know that. Luckily, we have Dwyer here to not make me look as bad, ultimately, in the end.
Sergei or Sergei Kovalev.
All right. Kovalev. Look, Haney's rating to bust out. This was a big get for Eddie Hearn and for DAZN. I don't know anything about Abdulayev here, Rafe, but I'm fired up to see this fight on Friday. How's that for analysis?
I'm with it, man. I am not far ahead of you in that regard. But Abdulayev, strong amateur background, one of these guys with weird names. He could be dangerous, Brian. He could be dangerous. No, I want to look, listening to the analysis of people who I trust and who have paid more attention to this than I have, it's the best fight yet for Devin Haney. It is a real fight. The reason that everyone is overlooking Abdullayev is just has a lot more to do with how high the boxing community is on Devin Haney and his future. And
I thought you were going to stop there and say how high the boxing community is and just leave it right there. But no, keep going. Yeah.
Stay off the weed boxing community, except for Bob Arum.
Yes.
But yeah, no, I mean, Abdullayev is a quality prospect verging on contender. It's just that people with good reason believe that Haney is a real future star in boxing, and there's more excitement over how good will he look in getting past this real test, whether can he get past this real test. But shoot, yo, Abdullayev, prove everyone wrong,
he's
right?
He's 25 years old, Abdullayev, 11-0 with 7 KOs from Russia. Went the distance in outpointing Hank Lundy, the husk of washed Henry Lundy there in 2018. This should be interesting. Devin Haney is waiting to burst, Rafe. I got a chance to talk to him late last fall when on that podcast media row there during Golovkin Jacobs week, and confident, man, 20 years old, ready, the Devin the Dream, ready to just burst out, ready to create bulges. Rafe, ultimately, I mean, the man that he killed there was Antonio Moran in May. Yeah, got a decision win over Juan Carlos Burgos, stopped Rock Hard Mighty. He's doing some things, Rafe.
You think he's truly ready to burst? Are we going to see it in the ring on
Saturday?
I was
talking more about you.
Well,
Grisham's voice,
management is top elite. All right.
I was talking about the combination of Todd Grisham's voice on the call and you pumping it a few times more than once.
Him and his brother used to bang it out all the time. Now you
also on this card quickly, Rafe, I can't pronounce the guy's name in the co-main event, so I won't go further. Do you care about former cruiserweight Michael Hunter, now a heavyweight, taking on Sergey Kuzmin?
Yeah, why not? Look, Michael Hunter has only lost in going the distance to Alexander Usyk. That loss ages better every day. He's looked damn good at heavyweight.
And he almost got the Joshua fight that Ruiz got and knocked him out. That's very interesting.
Yeah, man. Let's see where this guy goes. But the more the merrier in that division, baby.
All right, Saturday in Vegas, it is that Fury Otto Valeen fight we talked about. Who's Valeen? He's 6'5", southpaw, unbeaten. Has not been tested despite his amateur Olympic background. They tried to get him, like we talked about with Steve Farhood, on that Showtime card with Carissa Shields. The fight only went one round before ending due to a whatever. They tried to book him again. The fight fell.
The great Nick Kisner. No fighter active today looks more like a Mario Brother plumber than Nick Kisner.
And so we don't really know about Valeen, but you're going to have to assume, Rafe, that this will be different than the Schwartz, that Tom Schwartz, who Fury looked fantastic in peppering and knocking out, was more of the Seferi variety. So if this is step up number two in 2019 for Fury,
you're thinking we might see a pinata.
This could be pinata-ish. I would assume Valeen is more live. He's got some technical skills. Could be fun early seeing how Fury navigates this. I just hope for Fury's sake and for ESPN's sake. And again, I think there's an argument to make here for ESPN. Why are these fights not on regular ESPN if you're trying to build Fury's pay-per-view brand outside of putting it on the Plus and trying to build your subscriber base for that? But I'd like to see Fury, second fight in a row, step on the gas and do maybe what doesn't come comfortable for him, but make statements and get the people out of there once he's learned how to decode them and built up a lead.
Yeah, I would like to see that. I'm already thinking ahead. You know, this is a traditional huge weekend in boxing, right? Mexican Independence Day weekend. There is no Canelo fight or huge fight like traditionally we have. The WBC Mayan belt will be on the line for this fight. But really what I'm thinking of is how cringy does the Tyson Fury tribute to Mexico ring entrance get on Saturday night?
I could be done with that. All right. I could be done with that.
You think it could be cringy?
Hey, Fury's teetering right now in my fanship. All right, the good ship lollipop here. The not the BC journalistic viewpoint on life, but the BC fan boat. Fury's kind of one leg over the side. All right, the waters are getting choppy here. All right,
don't take it so personal, Brian. He's still he is who you thought he was. He's just also a little bit more in not the best way.
We still got a few more to talk about.
I think he beats Valine easily.
It's going to be interesting.
Think about Tyson Fury. He's fighting some guy named Schwartz next.
No, that already happened, Rich. Wrong button. All right. Hey, in this co-main event, quick turnaround here for Emmanuel Navarrete. After twice sending Isaac Dogbe to hell and then coming back in a featured bout on ESPN, he's back again in this co-main defending his WBO junior feather title against Juan Miguel Ilorde. Is he a Pinoy?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. Oh, yes. The grandson of the great Flash Ilorde. Almost the most common boxing gyms in the Philippines are Ilorde brand boxing gyms. So you see, like, it's really like the it's like kind of the way you would see like UFC gyms on the side of the freeway here. You just see Ilorde boxing all over the country.
Wow.
And
though his name is Juan Miguel?
I have played basketball with his older brother, Nico, who is short, but man, yo, wow. One of the roughest, don't ever handle the ball around that man. He will just strip the hell out of you. Just a great ball hawking small guard. I'm going
to
be rooting for Ilorde, who is probably way overmatched in this.
They used to say those same things about Yusuf Mack on the basketball court. Does Juan Miguel have a Mexicano mama?
I don't believe so.
All right. Navarrete getting some push here. What are your thoughts on Isaac Dogbe coming back in a 128 catch rate bout against Carl Frampton with both coming off of losses? Wow, I love that fight.
Ballsy. Both fighters extremely ballsy because, both. It's a huge setback for either fighter who loses.
Yeah, man.
It is also... I mean, I think it's very dangerous for Frampton. This is the kind of style that he doesn't like. A very active, physical, strong, sloppy guy who's going to be trying to get in his A, get in that ass.
I mean, let's bring in T-Street for a second here.
Inside that big scrotum is huge, huge testicles.
Yeah, man. What does he have? I mean, ultimately.
He's got real big balls.
Thank you.
Real big
balls. You know Terrell Van, T-Street, my guy?
I don't know, but I like that sound.
All right. You're going to be looking forward to this Navarrete fight. He's must-see. But, Rafe, there is a fight below this on Saturday's ESPN Plus card
that has you
and I real fired up. The Jose Super Bowl 10 rounds junior welterweights, Jose Pedraza against Jose Zepeda, the Freddie Roach train fighter who you and I, when we were in Fresno that night, watched him lose to Jose Ramirez in a fight that I thought he won.
Yeah, he fought a great. He looked like a world class fighter against Jose Ramirez that night. I mean, just smart, good counter punching, tricky style. I like this guy. I think it's a dangerous first fight for Pedraza at 140 pounds, and I like Pedraza a lot. But wow, this is not a pushover.
Yeah.
I guess perhaps Cepeda doesn't have a ton of the. He doesn't have a ton of knockouts, right? He doesn't seem like a heavy, heavy power puncher. Maybe this is just like make it through this fight on your feet, Pedraza, and you will come out with a close decision. It's a good fight. It's a good fight. I'm looking forward to seeing it.
The 30-year-old Jose Zepeda is kind of like the Mexican sexy Sergio, right?
Southpaw, tricky. He doesn't do the hands down. I mean, he's not quite as doesn't have the daring do of Maravilla.
Yes. He's a California boy, by the way, born in the U.S. Like his style, like Freddie Roach in his corner. Want to see that fight? A lot of names on this undercard, Rafe. If my computer would only load faster, I would tell you. Also on this card, Carlos Cuadras is back knee. He's back against Jose Maria Cardenas, 10 rounds junior bantamweights. We got Gabriel Flores Jr. against Miguel Angel Perez Ice Puro. 8 rounds lightweight, say that fast, and Felix Valera in a light heavyweight duel against Vyacheslav Shabransky with two
Ys. Oh, Vyacheslav.
Yes. Okay, let's move on quick. I got to get out. It's almost skinhead white guy time. I'm sorry. We sometimes record these back-to-back. Also Saturday in London on ESPN+, this screams like MTK Global, Rafe. Brad Foster and Lucian Reed in the main event for Foster's British Junior Feather title. No one cares, right, Rafe?
I do not care.
Does anybody even watch those MTK Global fights?
Yeah, I'm sure there are some people out there. There are some real, real hardcores who put us to shit, make us look like casuals,
yeah,
Brian.
Saturday, Carson, California. This is probably in the war grounds there, right? In the old StubHub. It's DAZN, and it's Jaime Munguia in his final bout at 154 before trainer Eric Terrible Morales, my campeón, said that he will move up to 160. He's going to defend his WBO junior middleweight title against Patrick Alote. I don't know much about this opponent, Rafe. Do you?
I have done some research. The man got sent to hell pretty quickly by Patrick Teixeira. I think that's the end of this analysis.
Curtis Stevens sent to hell.
Yes. By the transitive property of sent to hell, this does not look good for Patrick Alote.
You know who does look good is Ryan Garcia. He's a very handsome kid, Rafe, and he'll be back in this co-main event against Avery Sparrow. 10 rounds lightweights. Rafe, this has the potential to be a very competitive fight. This is interesting.
This has trap fight written all over it, man. I mean, Avery Sparrow is a Philly fighter. His only loss is by disqualification. He's coming off a win over Washed Lundy, which is still probably better than any single win on King Ryan's record. This is dangerous stuff.
Yeah, man.
Man.
And then I take advantage. And then when I shoot my shot, I shoot, you know, for the KO.
Unfortunately, he was talking about his love life with that quote, Rafe. Also, we got a title bout in this card. Franchon Cruz DAZN will defend her WBC women's super middleweight title against Alejandra Jimenez. All right. Also on Fight TV on Saturday, Rafe, from Monticello, New York. Carlos Takam of Joe DiGuardia promotional fame now will have a heavyweight 10-round bout against Craig Lewis in this main event. Why would Takam sign there and not fight Usyk on DAZN? I don't understand boxing. Also, Rafe,
are you going to go down that undercard for me?
What do you got? Say it.
First of all, shout out to Monticello. Shout out to Sullivan County. My grandparents lived there when I was growing up. I went to day camp for a couple summers up there in Monticello. They used to bring me to the basketball courts in Monticello, my counselors, and have me hustle kids there.
Wow.
This was,
summer got girls there.
I felt like hot stuff, man. Not just because, like, I would come in. I'm from the city, man. I could serve all of you.
You on point, Rafe?
Because what's that?
You on point, Rafe?
All the time, Brian. All the time. And so, I have a lot of affinity for the area, for the Monticello racetrack and the new casino up there. Joe DiGuardia, thank you for bringing these fights up there. Takam, I don't really care about, but look on the undercard. A guy from your neck of the woods in Connecticut, Hartford, Richie Popeye the Sailor Man Rivera.
I know him. Wow. 8 rounds light heavyweights against Israel Dufus.
What is up? Do you know anything about this guy? I've only watched him from afar.
He does
looks
local
ridiculous.
Shows. Yeah, he's very charismatic.
He has the real Popeye tattoos.
Yes.
He wears the Popeye hat and pipe. He has like a crazy silver platinum front in his mouth.
I might F around and watch this on Fight TV. Yeah. All right.
Bye.
Also Saturday in Tweed's Head, Australia, Bilal Dib versus Carlo Magli. I don't care, Rafe. In Bethlehem, Pennsylvania, there's a non-televised card with Michael Fox, the junior welterweight in the main event. I know you don't care about that. All right. That's it, Rafe. I can't do this anymore, okay? I got the skinhead show coming up right now. Shout out to you. Shout out to Tyson Fury and Heather Hardy for joining us. Shout out to our super fan, Alex Godinez. Hey, we got some other great fans and listeners here, too, like Dylan Hager, like Quality Bloke. Sometimes I feel like we've got 3 fans, but I love them, all right? Shout out to Eric Raskin in the Showtime Boxing Podcast. check out that collaboration with Al Bernstein this week while Kiernan is somewhere saving whales. Ray, if you got any messages for the people, anything to say on the way out here?
Shout out to Homer for the DM slides. Shout out to Ulrich Anderson for the email slides. Pop Bloke, shout out to all of y'all.
Shout out to Omaha, Nebraska.
We out.